Hang in there, it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show and Smiley Kaufman. We're recording this in the waning moments of the 2024 calendar year. So let me be the first to wish you a happy new year as everyone else here is listening to or watching this in 2025. I'm hoping that you had a wonderful holiday time with your family. I think you're in Hawaii at this point in time, getting ready for the century. How was it? How was Christmas at the Kaufman household?
I wish I could just like fast forward right now to being in Hawaii, the flight with the fam. It's going to be a battle. So I may even call it a war, but we're going to get there.
I've been privy to the backstage preparations the Kaufman family is undergoing. It feels a lot like the same preparations the Hume family was getting ready to do for the drive down to South Florida. And many people forget we have a drive back up to Durham, North Carolina coming up here in the next week or so.
It's going to be
a tough one, but
I'll say that, Christmas is great, but I'll say that maybe Christmas falling on a Wednesday, I can't decide if that's the worst or the best day for Christmas to fall because it seemed like my calendar clock of what day of the week it was totally backwards the last 2 weeks. And I don't think I'm calibrated yet. Like today being Saturday, the 28th has thrown me off. Like today has felt like just a Tuesday, right? Like it didn't feel like a day. It's like, oh, you want to go out to eat? You know, that's typically what we do on the weekend. Didn't feel like that was in the cards for us tonight, but it was.
Yeah, the Christmas period and also like the no golf on the calendar period, I completely lose track of days of the week, dates of the month, just completely. I have no idea what day it is at all. And I just kind of let it happen. It's kind of nice to just get lost in it a little bit. Make some content for the pod, for TV, which kind of take a little breather there and just forget that we were on the clock.
I also typically watch a show right after Christmas, like those 2 or 3 days. I think I took like 12 steps over 2 days.
Wow.
Like really settled into the couch. Haven't done that in a while. Haven't watched a show in a while. And rewatched White Lotus season 1. Have you seen that show?
You know, I started and I never finished it.
It's wild, man. It is so wild. And it's based out of Hawaii. That's my memory was like, White Lotus, let's rewatch the show. It's based out of Hawaii. And the writing's like all over the place in the show. Completely insane. Like it's the type of show if you happen to watch with your family for the first time, like what, like around the living room, I feel terrible for you because there's a couple of really, really dicey scenes in there. Yes. but it's, just, I feel like I needed that reset to ready to get back to work and I'm ready for this swing coming up. I'm ready for golf season to start. I'm ready for more people to really start caring about golf again.
As am I. Is this part of this yearly Floridian getaway? This is our third year in a row now. It's a time of year where like everyone's putting their clubs up, but I get to break them back out and get out there and scratch the itch again and play on some nice kind of sunny back in shorts. So it is hits at the perfect time to get your gear back.
It's like you're PGA Tour season. You're playing golf on a different planet. Like when you go where you are in North Carolina, or for me, Alabama, and everything's dormant. It's dormant. Wet. Ugh. It's a nightmare to play in. Brutal. And then you get to Florida and it's like shorts, like you're talking about. And it's pretty much always blowing 20 miles an hour every day in Florida. So you go out and play, you feel great. The outfit looks good. And then you're like, no, this was a bad idea.
Well, then you go back home, put the clubs up again, and then you're back at it in 2 months trying to remember what you worked on when you were down there. But no, it's I'm fired up for golf. And I guess let's just dive into it, Smiley, because we had a big piece of breaking golf news coming out of the Christmas period, which is strange for the most part. And it is connected to the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler. And maybe again, I mean, you know how infatuated I am with Scottie Scheffler as a golfer, as a dad, as a human being. So this may be just giving too much credit to Scottie. But to me, this is like, how is everything he does that makes news make everyone like him more? He's the everyman. He's not going to hire a chef. He's not going to let someone else make the Christmas dinner. He's in the kitchen. I'm going to do all the work. And then as a result of that, and this is part of a statement his agent Blake Smith released, on Christmas Day while preparing dinner, Scotty just sustained a puncture wound to the palm of his right hand from a broken glass. Small glass fragments remain in the palm, which required surgery. He has been told that he should be back to 100% in 3 to 4 weeks. Unfortunately, he'll have to withdraw from the Century. His next scheduled tournament is the American Express. So, Smiley, would you care to do any amateur doctoring or you know, prognostication around, you know, the severity of that palm injury?
Well, I agree with you about the hiring the chef thing. He's an every man's guy, you know, being a part of the Christmas dinner preparations. But what – explain this to me. So sure. I just kind of pictured it being some type of, you know, big knife that was used to cut some type of meat, right? That's what where my brain went. And then I see fractured glass and I'm wondering, okay, that mm-hmm. doesn't add up, because you would have expected to see like sliced finger or something like that in the statement. But what we saw was okay. So now my brain's going to, okay, how would I ever get glass in my hand? And so my brain went to like, you know, that awkward, you know, you don't have red Solo cups. And so now we're just going to use the cups that are in the counter, you know, the glass cups. And a situation, you know, you bumped into me type of deal. Next thing you know, hand is cut on a glass. I don't know. Am I way off here?
I think, and I'm actually surprised that you're not warmer here given your stage in life, because to me, this one is, I'm showing up on the crime scene and I'm recreating this entire thing. And I think I know exactly what happened. This okay. is classic. This is classic. I think what's happening here is he's holding Bennett. Meredith's taking out the nice glasses, the nice Christmas stuff that we're using, the little ceramic plates with a tree on it. You know, for once a year, you know, you pull out all that stuff and you get to use it. I think he's probably around the sink holding Bennett. He's trying to kind of do some double duty because he is a world-class athlete. And I think it's a situation where he drops a glass and it's going toward the sink or something and he's trying to catch it. And in one sort of motion, it shatters, glass gets in his hand,
and
there we are. That's my guess.
Can I give you my second theory?
Please.
So he's got Bennett, and Bennett drops his pacifier in the trash can.
Okay.
He reaches down in there, and somebody had thrown their Michelob Ultra in there, and it was a bottle, and it was cut, you know, 3/4 in half or whatever, like, you know, picture a broken bottle. That's what he went for the passing.
I like that one too.
And he went so aggressively to try to grab it that he cut his palm on a beer bottle.
We're not assigning blame to Bennett here. We're merely
Bennett seems to be a part of all of these scenarios. Except my first scenario, which was red Solo cups weren't available for you know, like a family drinking game, we should say, with 7-Up.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's everyone knows you break out the good 7-Up around Christmas for family games.
About a Fresca, huh?
Yeah, a Fresca too. Yeah, we know the realities of how this thing goes. And I say this because I've almost done a very similar set of things while trying to manage multiple children. So get well soon, Scotty. I think that we thought dad back. We thought Bennett was going to be the cause of a decline for Scotty initially with the dad back. That did not happen. So maybe Bennett found a different way to slow his dad down and allow the rest of the PGA Tour into the picture to start the year. So Bennett, thank you for creating some parity on this tour. Well done.
Yeah, little guy. It's a bummer for us. We were excited to have Scotty at the Century, you know, kind of just kickstarting what would be a fun 2025. Now he's not playing, it's not the end of the world, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Tiger didn't play the at Kapalua for a long time after he won a couple, you know, however many so years in a row at Kapalua. So not the end of the world, but I will say that I know exactly how the situation went down with Victor Hovland's injury. That one's easy.
Okay, so that's perfect. That's a perfect tease, because this is the part of the episode where we're just going to outline what we're going to do here. And we did something similar last year, but this one is maybe a little more organized. This is our 2025 season preview, right? So each of these sections of the show, we have a different sort of thematic or topic structure. We're trying to kind of get everybody ready in the swing of things, you know, as it starts to warm up, you know, in Hawaii and various places. We're trying to kind of get you ready for the 2025 season to kick off. So Victor is our next topic, and we have something attached to Victor. But we're going to start with Scotty, and the first question we're asking here is, how many wins in 2025 will Scottie Scheffler have? And maybe already kind of behind the eight ball, skipping the century, because that could have been one he could have won. In 2024, just a refresher, he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He won the Players. He won the Masters. He won RBC Heritage, the Memorial, Travelers. He, of course, won a gold medal at the Olympics. He won the Tour Championship, and he won the Hero World Challenge. So, Smiley, what number are you assigning to Scotty this year?
I think the safest place to like set an over under to me, I think five win seasons have been such a benchmark over, you know, since the turn of the century. Is that right? Turn of the century, 2000 to.
Yeah, that's
okay. Just making sure, like my math was.
We're a chronology pod. Who would have thought? Not me.
Well, since 2000, right? We know that Tiger Woods has done it plenty of times, winning five plus times. We've seen Scotty Scheffler do it last year, and I look at the seasons that there have been five win players, and you got Justin Thomas has done it, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Vijay Singh. All four of these guys have done it. And I even think about guys who've never done it. Phil Mickelson has never won five times in a season. Rory McIlroy has not done it, at least with just official PGA Tour wins. So 4.5 is a good place to start just based off of history, right? Like if he's able to win more than 4.5, now we go to the category of, okay, Scotty could be different. Like he's having an incredible three-year run, won player of the year 3 years in a row. He's won two Masters, won all the times you just talked about. We are going to have to start putting Scotty in a different category if he backs up this season with something anywhere similar, whether it's five, six, seven wins on the PGA Tour. To me, that it's unprecedented. When we just talk about Phil Mickelson already in the Hall of Fame, won X amount of times. Rory McIlroy won so many times. And it's only been done by four other players outside of Tiger Woods. So that's where my brain goes, is 4.5, over under on it. I think he was probably going to win the century. So that would have been one potentially. But let's say now he's not playing, now that we know. I think 4.5 is it's going to be hard, right? The talent's there.
I mean, I'm surprised you're coming out that conservative, because I really do think it's going to be a double-digit win year for Scotty Scheffler. And I just think we went from last year, the first part of that year was taking the putting from really bad to like baseline average, which, as we've talked about numerous times on this podcast, if Scotty is putting really, really bad, he's probably a top 10 finish. If Scotty's putting average, he is in and around the lead, or he's winning the tournament by a shot or two. If Scotty's putting it good, above average, he's winning by five shots. So last year we saw the correction in large part due to the switch from a blade putter and messed around with some different, you know, went from a Scotty to like the Logan Olsen putter that then, you know, that company got acquired by TaylorMade, and it finally gets into that TaylorMade spider, and whatever it is sort of clicks. And then he starts winning it at a higher clip. That putting improves. And then we saw toward the latter stage of this season doing some more work, I think with Phil Kenyon, they've continued to work together. He goes to that sort of saw grip on, you know, whatever you want to say, 15 or 10 feet in, and you know, made a big sort of leap in that category that I think is going to continue into 2025. So
that sample size is just so small. Even though it was very impressive what he did, I watched every shot of it, I still think you got to take that with a bit of grain of salt is sure, where I'm at right now.
Totally fair. And this is, and we're projecting here. I'm not really going out on that much of a limb here, but I'm just saying that
you're taking the over. It sounds like
I'm well over. I mean, I'm doubling it. I think the tricky one there is that the Olympics this last year is kind of like a bonus event of sorts. It's an event that, you know, in that spot in the calendar, Scotty's not playing, you know, the Wyndham or whatever is going to be there. You know, he's going to play like that. That's like a bonus signature event of sorts, right? And then also the hero, I mean, I assume he's going to be back on the field this year, but maybe decides he kind of wants to lighten up the back half of his schedule, spend more time with family. And that's also like a non-sanctioned PGA Tour event. So really, you know, he has 7 official wins. So getting to 10 would be significant. But I think it's again north of 8.
Let me just play a little contrarian to your argument. Yes, like we just watched one of the greatest seasons this sport has ever seen, right? So why wouldn't you think he's just going to repeat it? Well, I'll say that his mental game and what he was able to basically take a leap going from, I thought, a player that overreacted to a lot, you know, always seemed to be bothered by missed putts or, you know, just hands on the hip situations that, you know, didn't look like Tiger Woods out there as far as the mental game and just being able to handle the ups and downs of a round and a 72 hole tournament. This past year, he gets some confidence in the putter. You could see that the confidence throughout the game comes about. But I just have to wonder, here's a guy that now, I don't know if it's expectations can get even higher to put even more pressure on yourself, because hey, winning is not easy. It takes a ton of mental energy to win any week on the PGA Tour. He's unbelievable at golf, but he's got to still, you know, compete at that same level and have similar ball striking statistics. Do we think that's going to hold up over time? Is he going to have any injuries? I don't know. I personally think I'm very close to that 4 total wins to 5 total wins. I think he wins 4 total. I would probably take the under. I would take 3 PGA Tour wins and 1 major. That's
wow.
I just think it's okay. Such
a little it's bearish. So
I think it's very difficult to back up a season like he had. He found a little bit of luck in some tournaments, like things went his way. He probably won 3 or so events that he probably shouldn't have, which in years past, like he wasn't even, you know, he was finishing 4th. He was winning these golf tournaments. So you have to wonder if the luck bug is going to be with on his side this year to win tournaments. You also have to throw in, the signature events, right? Like those are the ones that's where he was, you know, making his cake on were those events. Those are smaller fields. So I will say that's what Tiger was, you know, able to do, was always go and win those WGCs. So if it could be, you know, if I'm wrong, which I feel like right now my guess feels wrong, where he's going to, you know, make his hay again is going to be in those signature events.
Well, the thing you just touched on there briefly that I think is the most likely explanation if he doesn't replicate last season is another category that he's been either the best in the game or close to the best in the game has some sort of slight decline. Like, I don't think the putting goes back to broken, but I think it's like it's so hard to sustain singular greatness and a specific skill, or other players catch up to you. That I'm not saying his ball striking is going to get bad, or his short game is going to get bad, or his driving, you know, strokes gained off the tee is going to get bad.
I think his driver accuracy, if there was one spot that I could point to in just overall statistics and percentages, he hit about 66% of his fairways this year. That is just absurd.
Yes.
So when you hit it as long as he does and as straight as he did, dude, he's the best iron player in the world. Like, who's going to beat him? So that would be the thing as far as just if you point to one stat, and granted, too, his short game was unbelievable, just his overall chipping around the greens, the amount of times that he would chip in. Like, I just look back at Hilton Head. I believe it was the second hole on a Sunday, chips in from behind the green. You're like, oh, okay. Then just the ones he has to get up and down, he would get up and down. I just think that he's either going to prove me wrong that he is in the greatness category. I just am going to side with history, and that I think it's very unlikely that anybody's able to back that up. And I hope I'm wrong, because I think it would be incredible for the sport if he's able to do what you're talking about.
All right. So Smiley, we're going to wrap this first one with Smiley at 4.5. We're going to say, and I'm going to say I mean, saying 10 sounds so absurd. So I'm going to follow your lead. I'm going to say 9.5. I'm going to straddle
the fence
a little bit.
That's where you set the over-under.
Yeah, that's where I'm setting the over-under. And I'm of course, going to take the over. So that's wrapping, Scotty. Now, you just kind of foreshadowed this here. Victor Hovland posts an image on Instagram. I saw this last night. What appears to be a very broken toe.
Broken.
It is not a fun. I'm pulling up his caption right now. He said, bed frame one, me zero, which was a tough scene
Look
for
at
Vic.
This, man.
Dude,
you know what's even worse? Did you see the location?
What, that pinky toe?
No, the location on the Instagram, Kapalua. He's already there.
Oh, he's already there. So this is a hotel situation. You know what this is? Okay, hold on. Can I try to recreate the crime scene first?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Right. It seems pretty obvious. I know what I would have said right after, which is a very loud, very loud four-letter word.
this is classic. This is what the hotels have done. Because they don't want you to lose stuff under the bed. It's no longer a proper elevated bed with space underneath it. It's that big, like, wooden box. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly just him walking near the bed, being mm-hmm. used to there being some clearance there. And instead, bam, just kicking right in the side there. Is this where your head's at on that as well?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. The only other alternative I'll give you, and this is just a fun hypothetical. I don't think this actually happened. But he's got the perfect putting mat out. Victor Hovland's grinding on a stroke, and he continues to pull putts. This is late in the evening in Kapalua, Hawaii. This guy is losing his mind. Finally, pulls one off of the putting green and just absolutely hits his shoe. He's trying to break the putter, and unfortunately, the bottom of the blade strikes his pinky toe and broke his toe. That's hypothetical too.
This is so great. We're going to take a little bit of a turn off this topic for a second, because my brother, I briefly had a spider that was modeled after his, I putted with his on his bachelor party at Stream Song, loved it, ordered one, tried it, didn't work for me. After a while, I gave it back to him, and he texted me before Florida and said, "Hey man, I'm using your putter now." I was like, "Oh, what happened? Like you liked the weight on it, or you wanted a different look?" He's like, "Kept hooking putts on my putting green, smashed the thing, and I went to hit the next putt, and it was bent about 20 degrees. So I said, so long to that spider butter, and now I'm using yours." And I feel him there, because I had a moment like this in my attic at one point, was hooking putts. I had one of those, I think it's birdie ball, those foam ones. And I hooked one off the mat and just spiked the putter and made this huge hole in the middle of the thing. So then I had to take a cup a hole and cut another hole on the other side so I could flip it around and make it usable.
You're a sicko.
Total head case.
I said that story hoping that you had an experience that was somewhat similar. And here we are.
It hits really close to home. So either of those things can be plausible, though Victor seems like pretty chill. I will say this, becoming my new favorite tradition is, I did the whole song and dance with Victor Hovland. We had him on last year with the Norwegian roots and the traditional Christmas Eve dinner. We make codfish and everything. So every year I do this. I make the codfish, take a picture with my dad. I put it on Instagram story. I tag Victor and he replies. And again, this year it was, "Ha ha, enjoy it, buddy." It's great. It's so great. It's like we have this Norwegian kinship. So
that's a win. That's a win for the Hume Instagram account.
From the country from the greater Norwegian people, we're very sorry about your toe. Get well soon.
Did you see what Morikawa said?
Yes. Yes. Like everybody, I forget the exact comment, but it's something to the effect of like, "Put me in bubble wrap before I get to Hawaii."
Yes, exactly.
We got guys cutting their hands, making Christmas dinner. We got guys breaking their toes. This is not a good start to the season for the top 10 of the world.
Gosh.
He's at last check, because they just hadn't set a field update. He's still in the field. I don't know this situation where you can.
Okay.
I'd seem you need to use ground forces, but like, do you shoot him up? And
my brother-in-law, James, is an orthopedic resident in Greenville. Oh. And I said, "All right, Doc, what's the word here? You know, is he going to be able to play this week?" And he said he should be able to just reduce that and put him in a post-op shoe and he can swing. Might hurt to follow through. He could just buddy tape it and he can be a big dog and go out and play. And wow. I was like, well, what about Kapalu being the hardest course on tour to walk? Does that help or hurt things?
Yeah. And I assume it hurts, has to hurt. Can't help.
Well, I just think about the right pinky toe.
Right.
I actually think that wouldn't be the worst. You just,
it's not the, you know, you're not like driving onto that foot, right? The left,
you're like driving onto the inside of your foot. So if anything, you know, like you're driving on, like when you take it back and you're falling, when you're pushing off of your foot, right. I guess like you are pushing.
Right.
I don't know.
We need to get like, is Sean Foley a big ground force guy or is he the guy who doesn't believe in ground force?
Well, everybody's ground forces are different. I mean, I would say that most PGA Tour players have similar ground forces, but some guys hang back on their right foot. Some guys like Scotty, you know, shear their feet totally different. Victor to me is he's a rotator. So I would actually think that for him, it wouldn't be as good, but for Scotty, he wouldn't even know. Cause like, he doesn't even touch his right side of his foot.
You think they trade injuries right now?
What's that?
You think they trade injuries? Scotty and Vic? Trade you some glass for
a broken toe sounds awful.
So bad.
It sounds awful.
So bad. Yeah.
I think I say see you guys at the Amex and just take the slice finger.
Yeah. I think I'm probably the same. Because to your point, you got to walk. That's part of the thing we think about hitting the golf ball, but part of the sport is walking around. And you know, if it's a proper break, which it very much looks like, you got to wonder how much time they want him to take off. So I guess we'll see how it goes. We'll see if we see him in the field. But this is the entry point into the next topic on our list, which is defining a comeback player of the year. And it's hard to put Vic in this category because he started he ended, I guess, 2023 as the fourth ranked player in the world. And he ended 2024 as the eighth ranked player in the world. Not some precipitous drop off, but that's coming off winning the Tour Championship last year and only notched two top tens this past year on tour, though. Both those were, he was finished third at the PGA Championship and tied for second at the FedEx St. Jude. Was going through swing changes. He split up with Joe Mayo. Then he got back with Joe Mayo. So we're going to keep him in that category for now, or at least use him to tee up a list of names that we could potentially be comeback players of the year. Also in that category, just straight looking at an OWGR list would be Max Homa, who went from 7th to 40th. Matt Fitzpatrick, who went from 8th to 42nd. Will Zalatoris, who went from 38th to 63rd. Jordan Spieth, who went from 15th to 68th, and Ricky Fowler, who went from 23rd to 74th. So who do you like as a guy to have a really big bounce back year in 25?
Yeah, I agree with what you're talking about with Victor, because when you drop to 8th in the world ranking, you're like, it wasn't really that bad, right? Okay. But it really was. You know, when I talked to him at the beginning of the year, you know, he's grinding, he's hitting so many golf balls, he's going through this motor pattern change, and listening to him, he was excited, but also like you could tell he was anxious about what he was doing. And eventually gets back with Joe Mayo, which we were definitely supporting on the pod because we, you know, how highly I spoke of his golf game and what I saw on the ground. And that year prior, just making that run at the FedEx Cup and what he was doing at the Ryder Cup with Ludvig Åberg, just absolutely dismantling Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka, which I think we're going to look back at that result years from now and be like, how did that happen? Yeah. You know, like how did he get beat 9-7? But I go to two guys here, and it really is Victor or Justin Thomas to me. I think that I don't know if JT would be considered in that category as comeback player of the year, but the way I define this is if you're in a different tier than where we had you in the past year, the year before, like JT's been in a tier below where we expect him to be. And I think same with Victor Hovland. Like we talked about him, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, and John Rahm. We did that 2 years ago, the entire year, just talking about those four dudes. And I think JT, like how many times this past year, Charlie, did we talk about JT's game? And it really wasn't a whole lot because there wasn't a whole lot to talk about. We didn't see him in that elite status which I think when you go look at his history, man, he's a 17-time PGA Tour winner. Mm-hmm. That's where he should be looked at in this game. And so to me, I go back and forth between those two players. I think that Victor Hovland has worked his absolute tail off this season. I've heard from sources down in Florida how hard he's been working. And Justin went straight to the grinder right after not being picked for the President's Cup and really worked his tail off. And I loved what I saw from him at the Hero. That long driver seems to be a weapon. So in my head, I'm going back and forth there. I want to lean JT. I really think right now in the official world golf ranking, if we're going to use that just as a base, mm-hmm. he's currently 20th, Charlie. And I think it wouldn't surprise me this year to see him, like if we're making the jump, like this comeback player of the year type of jump, he's got to jump inside of, I'd say, the top six or seven in the world.
Yeah, so it's interesting because this is such a nebulous category. You can define it in any number of ways. And I almost see what JT did last year as being like he was teetering on the brink of people writing him off, right? Like he finished the year 26th and we're looking at he almost chipped into the Wyndham to make it into the top 70 to make the play.
Two years ago, right?
Yeah, so what I'm saying is he misses out on the playoffs. He gets a pick for the Ryder Cup, of course, in Rome.
Right.
It actually doesn't play bad as people were kind of really up in arms about that pick. But this he misses the playoffs there. He's 26th in the world, so he's not in signature events unless he stays in the top 30. People were wondering if he's going to stay there. He had, I think, two major championship rounds in 2023 where he shot in the 80s. And people are ready to say, hey, this guy's cooked, right? And instead what he does, he comes back and he goes from 26th in the world. He finishes the year 20th. And of course, I think JT wants to play better and vault himself back into the top 10. And what we're seeing is that he has the opportunity to do that. But for me, I felt like we saw enough of flashes of him getting the game back together toward the latter half of the year. Like some of the putting rounds he had at the Scottish, at the Open Championship, and then that long driver at the Hero, where to me, it was almost like a mini comeback in and of itself. And now he's kind of primed to get back in that player of the year, that top 10 sort of chase. So I'm categorizing him a little bit different than maybe some of these guys that had a big drop this past year.
Yeah.
Like I would have had him in this category. Yeah.
But
I see what you're saying. It's like, you're talking about a guy that can now he's got it on the right track and he could really launch himself. So I like it. It's fair.
It's being talked about as an elite player. And I think Justin knows that right now in the game of golf, who's being talked about the most and who's played the best and who's won over the last couple of years. And he hasn't been one of those guys. You know, he's been a guy that's really had to rely on picks for President's Cup, Ryder Cup teams. And in years past, he's qualified on points easy, not even a worry. You put that in your schedule well in advance. So that's where I lean JT. But if I had to, the other guys are interesting to me because you said Max Homa, Brian Harman. You also mentioned Will Zalatoris, Jordan, and Ricky Fowler. And that group's tough because Willie Z is a guy, if he went out and won twice this year, it wouldn't surprise me. I think the one that the biggest wild card of that group is probably Jordan because.
That's kind of where I was going to go without knowing the full health of his wrist. I just think golf is such an interesting sport. It's so different from, you know, football or basketball where there are these like gambling pieces where you have to publish an injury report and you can get fined if you're not very specific about how banged up somebody is. Whereas golf, a lot of guys have stuff going on under the surface that you just don't know about. It doesn't get talked about. You know, we know Jake Knapp was a little banged up last year. Ludwig Oberg, you know, he had that meniscus deal. People were wondering why his form dropped off after the Masters. It's like he was really dealing with a serious injury. Jordan's been dealing with this wrist thing, it feels like, for the past, you know, 3 years maybe, off and on, and finally gets the surgery on it. We'll see how productive that was. But for me, it's like if that's a guy who can come out and play pain-free golf and really feel healthy, we could see a guy that's back to where he really is as one of the elite players in the world.
Yeah.
So.
And that's, I would say that with Jordan, that's the one, like just saying a second ago, that seems like the wild card because I kept on trying to buy stock last year because I'm looking at his driver stats. I'm like, okay, this is good. Like if you've been a part of the Jordan Spieth experience, as far as watching him play golf, it's just that a couple errant shots, you end up in a weird situation, and then you get the great audio from him and Grower. That's kind of like why it's fun. Last year, you know, he was really aggressive with driver, and then the chipping was really a struggle around the green. It's like I would be willing to bet that his wedge game, his short game, were affected a bit by his wrists and how it would pop in and out. It wouldn't happen a ton on the course, but just in those little short shots and how much you hinge your wrists and unhinge your wrists, I think that had a bit of a mental effect on him, whether he wanted to admit it or not. So I agree with you that that's another step he could take. I don't know about Max. I'm really interested to see what kind of year he has. I'm a little worried about him leaving Mark Blackburn. I know he played pretty well at the President's Cup. I didn't get to see it with my own eyes, but he played decent at the Ned Bank. He's been making swing changes, going to see Boyd Summerhays now is what I've been told. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever buying stock when a guy goes to a new teacher and tries to redefine what they do. It's kind of a wait and see approach for me when it comes to that. So with Max, I'm kind of waiting and seeing. Ricky, I think the same thing. Like, you just want to see, I think with Rick, when you just like to see with his game, just a little bit more consistency to where he's making, you know, his worst week, you'd like to see, you know, being a made cut than and finishing around 30th. I think for him, it's too, like his four is a little too low right now for him. I think he's capable for sure of playing and winning on the PGA Tour, but the four to me just seems to be raised to where, you know, his worst week is a, you know, a top 30, top 40 instead of a miscut or a finishing towards the bottom of a made cut. That's kind of where I see Ricky's game. And I know he struggled with the driver a bit last year and the puttering at times. So for him, his driver sets up his whole game. So I think if he starts driving the better, so he should raise that four a little bit.
All right. So Smiley has once again successfully hedged a double pick in the comeback player of the year category. He's taking both Victor Hovland and Justin Thomas, which is just.
No, fantastic. I didn't take Victor. I took JT.
All right.
I took JT.
Very, very honorable of you to discard
the toe. Probably
picks.
Was the reason.
I'm going to go with Jordan. I'm hopeful the wrist is in a good spot. And now the next section, we're moving into a little bit of major talk here because it is very interesting looking at these, you know, preseason odds, so to speak, because it is a list of usual suspects for all four majors. All of them essentially feature the top six or top five players in the OWGR.
Yep.
Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg, and Colin Morikawa. Mm-hmm. Three of them feature John Rahm, and one features Bryson DeChambeau, two LIV players. I got to give a shout out to, you know, my guy Ludvig Åberg because he's on the Bay Golf Club. Do you see this super cool Yeti?
Sick, bro. Mm-hmm.
Look at this, you know, no big deal. I got shout out to Samantha Marks. By the way, you might have a little something coming your way, Smiley. A little something so you can do a little product placement for your boys down at Jupe Links. But yeah, so let's just start with that odds board for 2025 Masters. Scottie Scheffler is the favorite in all four of these majors, but the Masters he has tied for the shortest odds along with the US Open at +410. And then you have Rory McIlroy 9-1, John Rahm at 11-1, Xander Schauffele 12-1, Ludvig at 15-1, Colin Morikawa at 20-1. So,
well, you know what's crazy about Scotty is that you know we kind of talked about throughout the year a little bit when Scotty started really getting going, and then you started to see his odds dip down to we're like, oh. You know, Tiger got down to, was it 2-1 sometimes to win golf tournaments? You know, Scotty got close to, you know, 3-1 at times.
And
we see +360, at least on the site that I looked at for Scotty to win the Masters. And the closest anybody is as far as odds go to being, as far as just runner up, I guess you could say, as far as odds, Scotty's +400 at the PGA and Rory's +950. So 550 as far as a dispersion between those two. So, I mean, it's just the gap is so big right now. The odds makers have so much respect for Scotty and what he might do this major season.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, we really have hammered the Scotty is a horse for course trope on the show. And I think we're going to continue. I'm going to continue to do this for both comedic effect. But in this case, I think it is the one major that is played on the same course every single year. And Scottie Scheffler has now won his two majors at that venue. He clearly loves playing here. He's figured out some sort of formula of how to win at Augusta National. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. I mean, I think it's, we saw a really strong showing in terms of, the two closest challengers being Ludwig and Colin Morikawa this last year.
Yeah.
That's right. Obviously you have another, contender in that top six of odds in John Rahm, who has won a green jacket, so he can clearly do it. Every year on Rory, it's like such a wild card. Like, is this the year where he's going to finally figure it out at Augusta National, or is it going to be another year of over or under compensating in terms of the way you're going to go about prepping it and then, having a forgettable finish? But he's the next guy on the list. But for me, I'm not betting against. I might bet against Scotty in some of these other majors. I ain't doing it at Augusta National,
and you shouldn't. I think it's. But here I'll give you a history thing to play devil's advocate here when it comes to Scotty Scheffler not winning the Masters, and it's never been done 3 years in a row. Well, I guess Scotty didn't win. This wouldn't be three years in a row. This would have been because John Rahm
23, Scotty 24.
Okay, well. Nobody's ever won three of four except for Jack Nicklaus. So that would be the history side of this. I don't know how I forgot about John Rahm not winning it back in 2023 because I thought he had more history to chase. But still, he's got an opportunity to go back to back three of four. Jack's only done it. I have a hard time betting to say that Scotty wouldn't win there. But golly, it's... I'm excited, but I think you did make a great point as talking about the Masters, and it's the same course every year and we know what to expect. And I think the same goes for Quail Hollow, right? Like, it's the same course. We know what to expect. Yes, it's going to be probably a little longer, a little firmer. Rough's going to be a little bit more up. But when we go and look at this major calendar, the first two events are somewhat predictable with history, where a lot of times there's new venues or venues that hadn't been seen in like Valhalla, for instance. We hadn't seen it since Rory was had the crazy hair and he's 2014 I think it was the year. So those first two events, I think it's going to be potentially easier for us to kind of have a sense of what that top the leaderboard will be like. Augusta's easy, I would say, but I think the PGA Championship as well, it's probably going to be pretty easy to figure out who those players are going to be at the top.
Yeah, I mean, that leads right into that board, where this is the longest set of odds that Scotty Scheffler has to win outright of any of the four majors in 2025. He's at plus 550. Rory McIlroy right there at plus 850, which,
Your side is 850. Okay. So mine was 950.
And Xander 10-1, Rahm 12-1, Ludwig 15-1, and Morikawa 19-1 to round out that top six we're defining. I think that obviously odds makers are going to like Rory and Xander, given the way that the 2024, what was then the Wells Fargo, what will now be the Truest, finish with Rory kind of those two guys coming down the stretch and Rory running away with it.
Did Scotty play the Wells Fargo this year?
He did. He did.
Are you sure?
Oh, no.
I don't think he did.
That was during the Bennett layoff. I'm almost positive. We're going to do a little on the fly because no. Wait a second. Now I'm really for a twist because he took off after RBC Heritage. That was his last event.
That's right.
And then he took a break until the next major. And then that was when he came back.
It's all coming back to us.
Thank you for sticking with us as we kind of re-piece together the year 2024 on the fly here. Because the joke there about him getting arrested at Valhalla was like, guy has a kid and goes on the bachelor trip and gets arrested his first night out, and like a tale as old as time. So yes, okay. So now we're back caught up. Yeah. So Scotty was not there, not playing against those guys. Maybe it's a little bit different if he is.
This is the major again that I feel the worst about for Scotty. I just don't. I don't. he can win anywhere, and Scotty's best is probably as good to beat anybody. But I feel the worst about this one than I do any of the other ones. And that's even with a crazy draw at the Open. I just go back to I guess it was the President's Cup, where he was paired with Sam Burns, and Sam had this terrible record, and he was the best player at the President's Cup that year. And guess who his partner was that week? It was Scottie Scheffler. So I don't know if there's anything to Scottie and Quail Hollow, if he likes it or not. But in my head, I'm thinking, have you seen him win there? No. Well, have you seen him win pretty much everywhere? Yes. So it's like, okay, let's just, you know, apples and oranges here. It's like, okay, maybe Scottie Scheffler at Quail Hollow is something. And there's plenty of guys that have a ton of history here. So I would be looking at PGA Championship at Quail and seeing a Xander Schauffele, who has had back-to-back runner-ups at this event. Rory McIlroy has won four times at this tournament. And then I think there's all like a wild card. You got a major champion, of Justin Thomas, who's won at this golf course. And then you also have, you know, first timers. I think this is a potential first timer event, at Quail, with guys that have played year in and year out. There's no surprises, which I think at times too, when you talk about really tough tests and difficult golf courses, when you've seen it in a ton of different weather conditions, whether it's firm, whether it's soft, wind from here, wind from there, this whole location, well, they see it every year, right? Like there's no confusion how, you know, a Rory or Xander, like they know how they're going to play, but it's the guys that haven't won major championships. Well, they know how to play this golf course. It's just a matter of, are they going to be able to go do it in a major and execute?
Yeah. The two guys that I like further down the board are JT at 28-1. And my fellow hashtag Bay Boy, Wyndham Clark, at 55.
Well, sure. Yeah, he won at 23.
Won at 23. So it's to your point. It's like you don't always see a you know, PGA Tour recurring venue. And of course, it happens. But I mean, this is one of the few times where you can do much more in terms of predictive, you know, modeling for a tournament like this. Of course, set up differently. But I like JT and Wyndham a lot here. For obvious reasons. I'm not saying anything that's going to shock anybody.
Yeah.
But I do think we talked about this, you know, when JT played well at the Hero. I think JT wins a major this year, and I think this is where he does it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here for that. And I think he would buy a home in Charlotte if he did.
As well he should. Are you going to pick – this is a prediction show here, Smiley. So
I want to go through them all, and then I'll kind of – once we get him through,
you're gonna build up to it. I like that. I like that. All right, let's go to Oakmont, shall we? Which, by the way, very kind. I don't know if this person listens to the podcast. We have a neighbor down here in South Florida that's very kindly extended us an invitation to host us at Oakmont, do a little U.S. Open prep. Should we like to take him up on that offer?
We just might have to do it.
We just might have to do it. We even have a lodging. The whole thing set up for us. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you to that person that will not be named.
Very cool.
Hope to see you there.
So I played the last U.S. Open in Oakmont.
That's right. Is it correct that those were your two U.S. Opens were Pinehurst and Oakmont, correct?
Yeah, I don't think I played anymore. That sounds right.
You would know,
theoretically. I would know, and I think that sounds right.
Okay, so let's give you again. Let's just read the odds board to set the table.
Over two.
Close though.
I was close to making the cut. I think
we got to memorialize a little bit at some point in the show the fact that they're retiring the fifth major on the topic of majors.
We already discussed that. We already poured one out for them.
Well, did we really? I feel like we did. Well, maybe so. Anyway, so sad to see you go. So the odds board for the 2025 U.S. Open at Oakmont: Scottie Scheffler +410, Rory McIlroy 10-1, Xander Schauffele 11-1, John Rahm 12-1, Bryson 12-1. This is the only board in which he appears in that top six list, coming off his 2023 win at Pinehurst number two, or I mean 2024 win. I'm sorry, Pinehurst number two, and Ludvig Åberg at 16-1. Those are your top six there.
Oh, I didn't play good. The cut was six over. Mm. I shot, I think it's a par 70. I shot 77, 76.
That place does not seem easy.
Famously, it's not.
The famously for those who are trying to kind of conjure an image. Yeah. I mean, this is, I'd say Smiley, disagree with me if you think I'm wrong here. Oakmont most famous for those church pew bunkers, right? That's the lasting image a lot of people see when they think of this course.
It's the church pew bunkers on the third hole. They are on the left side of three and then also on the left side of four, par five. So those church pew bunkers, I don't remember if there's any more on the rest of the golf course, but Oakmont is the course that if the US Open ever had an issue with one of their venues, Oakmont is always ready to host because it's always US Open ready. And it's the most ridiculous hard golf course you'll ever play. You got to drive it good. The greens are insane. Some of the greens are too much, in my opinion. And the ones that are too much, this is where like I believe when I make my pick for this event, I'll probably side for a guy that fades the golf ball because I think the greens that are too ridiculous tilt this way, right to left. And so obviously that's a fader, favors a guy who can, you know, curve something into that slope, but ridiculous hard golf course. And
should I play the US Open tees when we go on the scouting trip? And what do you think I will shoot at this course from the US Open tees?
You wouldn't.
I don't think I'd break 100, to be honest.
You'd shoot in the 90s.
You think so?
Yeah, so would I.
Okay. All right. I don't know that we're allowed to do any sort of a video project at Oakmont, but I can guarantee you that if we do get the chance to do the scouting trip, we'll do our best, if it doesn't offend the membership, to play the US Open tees and give you the full report as to how we did ahead of the US Open. I'm very much looking forward to this now. So amongst that, do you like someone, knowing what we know about the course and its difficulty, do you like, again, from our usual suspects list of six, plus the other guy that is not in that top six on this list, but it appears in the other three, is Colin Morikawa at 20-1, also at 20-1, Victor Hovland. Do you like someone from that list or you like someone beyond?
I mean, Xander's record at US Opens is just ridiculous. If you go and look at it, it's like top 10 of his last 8 years, has yet to win one. So Xander's a guy that would be an obvious pick, but I can't get this out of my brain. And it's John Rahm. I just feel like John Rahm at this golf course, to me, it seems like it's going to be a match made in heaven. Just his ability to fade the golf ball into some of these really difficult, challenging greens. He drives it long and straight. Rahm, to me, is a player at this course. You know, Dustin Johnson won at this place back in 16. So I keep thinking about wherever Rahm. I don't know what Rahm's odds are, but to me,
both one.
Yeah,
which is the fourth shortest and tied with Bryson 12-1. Yeah, I mean, I know this is it's early, so a lot of these are going to feel chalky when we're talking about them.
Totally.
But I just, you know, more so than any of these majors, we know the US Open is a grueling, demanding precision execution test on every single shot you hit in this major. And so to me, and we were talking a few months ago about the, I think it was Golf Digest that did the stat profiles of the webs of what everyone does well. And Xander was the only guy that had all five tools. And to me, I know that's a little chalky, but to me, it's like, he is the guy that if you're telling me you have to hit it straight on every single shot, you know, off the tee and with approach shots, and you have to be a very solid putter on difficult greens. That to me is where I think Xander gets his third major of his career. Just because of how demanding and exacting Oakmont is going to be as a test of golf.
Okay. I think I'm you're right, too. Yeah.
Book me for Xander. So I got Scotty at the Masters. I've got JT Aquale at the PGA. And I've got Xander at Oakmont. And we're going to wait for Smiley's big reveal in these picks.
I'll catch up with you here. Okay. So for the Masters, I'm going to go with a first-time winner in Ludwig Åberg.
I love that.
Which is what also is interesting too. The last time there hasn't been a first time winner in a major championship was 2014. So that trend from 2015 and on, there's been a first-time winner. I'm going to go with Ludwig Åberg. I think his experience last year is going to help him this year. And hey, if it went for a pulled six iron on the 11th hole, who knows what happens? And guess what he's not going to do on Sunday this year if he has the opportunity? Pulled in that dang pond. So give me Ludwig there. Although Scotty, like any of these picks, I'm like, I'd like to take Scotty for them all. So PGA, that's the one I don't like him in as much. I'm going to go. Give me Rory McIlroy at the PGA.
Very cool.
US Open, I'm not interested in Rory there. Scotty interests me a lot. Scotty, Xander, and John Rahm. But I think I already said I'm going to go with John Rahm. So that would be my one LIV golf player to win a major this year. I would go with John Rahm there. But I also have something on my sleeve at the Open. I have some guys that I have my eye on.
All right, well, let's get right into it there. This year, Open Championship, the final major of the year being held at Royal Portrush. Scotty Scheffler, plus 430, right at the top of the board again. Rory McIlroy, plus 850. Then you have Xander, 10-1. Ludwig, 16-1. Rahm, 16-1. And Colin Morikawa, also 16-1. So do you want to just launch into it there? If you got a little... got something a little funky at the Open?
No, I mean, this one's the one that's the hardest one to predict because of the draws. You'd like to see the tee sheet right now and be like, all right, where's the weather going to be? Who's in what wave? Because you never really know when it comes to the Open. But hey, we do have a venue that's been played there recently, being the Open, where Shane Lowry won by a bunch. He also was, Shane Lowry, if you didn't realize, shot six over on Sunday at Oakmont. So he was the guy that had a four-shot lead at Oakmont, and Dustin Johnson goes and shoots one under, wins that event. It's one under. But I have good feelings about multiple players at this event.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is like the dark horse one or another first-time winner event, but I think another LIV player who has been slept upon that has played really well is Tyrrell Hatton.
I knew you were going to say it.
I
love him at the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
I have, you know what, can I cancel my John Rahm pick at the US Open? And I'm going to put Scotty wins the US Open, and I'm going to go to the Open Championship and pick Tyrrell Hatton to win.
Wow. I love it. In fact, I was going down a similar path in that I was going to say wild card. I do think, because that's one of the questions we're going to answer here in a second, is will a LIV player win a major? And I was going to say not John Rahm, not Bryson DeChambeau. I think Tyrrell here could be a good pick, but I'm not going to steal your pick there. I think it's a great one. I think this is a first time winner of a major at this event, this fourth major of the year.
So you're telling me Rory McIlroy is not bringing it home? He's not bringing it home.
I think.
Can you imagine?
I mean, it'd be tough. I'd love to see. I just feel like we're just at a point now with Rory where there is so much pressure in every single one of these majors when he tees it up.
No, he already won Quail. I just told you.
That's right. I forget. He's coming into this having won the PGA Championship 2 months earlier. So I got to throw all these stats out. But you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, even just watching him at Royal County down this last year at the Irish Open where we all want to see him win. You know, it'd be magical at that venue. You know, even though it's a DP World Tour event, you know, that's in the fall, you know, it's a national open, and it's just hard to get that thing done with all those. You know, you could be the mentally toughest person on the planet if you have his talent and his major record and in the back of your mind that drought and all these expectations on you. It's really, really hard to get it done. I'd love to see it happen. I'm not going to go in that direction. The two guys I'm looking at are similar kind of on the odds board. They're obviously not in that first cut, but they're not far off. Tommy Fleetwood, 22-1, and Victor Hovland, 26-1.
Tommy was the other guy I was going to mention, man. Tommy, he played good. He was in the final group with Shane Lowry on Sunday at Portrush.
Like, I want to go Vic just because, you know, we love Vic on the show. Be a nice bounce back story, be a first major. I'm going to predict Vic. That's going to be my plug in there for the Open Championship. But holy smokes, can you imagine the scenes I know. If Tommy Fleetwood wins his first major there, it would be unbelievable.
Yeah. And in all of this, somehow, like we have failed to really mention at all who I think could be the player. Like, this was a conversation I was having with you and talking about, is there a player that can do what Xander Schauffele did this year other than Scottie Scheffler, which is go and win two majors? Is there a player capable of doing this? Now, you could say John Rahm obviously is capable of doing that, yes. But one who I think is just, like, if we can compare what Xander Schauffele coming into the year, and one of my favorite episodes we did was with Trevor Immelman. And it was actually to do a bit of a prediction for this past year. And Trevor said, I was like, man, is there a guy that you think could break through and take that next step? And he was like, Xander Schauffele, he's got to break the door down. And the player that fits that profile right now is Colin Morikawa. He's a guy that has not won in quite some time, but man, has he been right there. He has been right there every single week. He's totally found his game back. And it would not shock me at all to see a year in where Colin has a similar results, where he finds a way to win two majors. He's done it before, winning the Open Championship and the PGA. And so I'm like, okay, is
Colin? How do we not pick Colin for any of these?
Well, that's what I'm saying, man. He's being slept upon so badly right now. Even us, we just talked about it all. Like, we want to look at the top guys with Scotty, Rory, and Xander, and we want to throw in like Ludwig, like I did at the Masters. But it would not shock me whatsoever to see Colin Morikawa win at the Masters. I could picture it right now, him in a green jacket, and then him picking off the Open Championship at Port Rush. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's won an Open Championship before. That was a COVID Open, right? That was 2021.
I think it was St. George.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think you're correct there. Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting that the one major where they like him, not the least, but he's just not in that top six group, is a U.S. Open, because I just think of him being such an accurate guy that it lends himself to that type of test. But
actually, this Oakmont's a good one for that. I think you need to be accurate. Like, just this leaderboard, when I look at it, Dustin Johnson, Jim Furyk, Shane Lowry, Scott Piercy, Sergio Garcia, Brendan Grace, Kevin Na, Jason Day, Jason Duffner. Those are Zach Johnson. These are dudes that hit it straight. Like, so, you got to hit it straight. So Colin could be a good Oakmont fit.
So let me just, this is perfect, because we have a number of questions here that we were going to run through as we're deep into this episode now. But these were coming out of our major section, and one was, will anyone have a Xander breakthrough? And I love what you just said with Colin Morikawa, because we talked last year about how he just was in and around it at every single major event. I should say at every single major, but also at every single, you know, big signature event, big PGA Tour event, was around it the entire year and won the Tour Championship if there were not starting strokes, but of course did not get credit for that win. So I'm in agreement on that one. First-time major winner.
Real quick, though.
Sure.
Just another quick stat on this with the two majors in a year. You know, it's easy to throw around and say, yeah, I could see somebody win two majors in a year, but let's look at the data. So the only players that have done this since, let's just use 2000 as our base mark, because I think most of us, at least I didn't watch much golf before 2000. So for me, it's hard to talk about Jack Nicklaus winning two majors, Arnold Palmer in the 60s. That's difficult for me to talk about. What I can talk about is 2000 and on. It's a Tiger Woods. He did it four times, winning two majors in a year. Patty did it once. Jordan did it once. And Brooks Koepka did it once. And now Xander has done it once. So it's been done, but by one player. Scotty hasn't done it. We obviously feel that he's capable of not only winning two, but he could win three in one year. That wouldn't shock any of us. But with that being said, it's easy to say, oh yeah, they could totally win two a year. But when you look at it, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because it's going back to our horse for course trope. You know, where Scotty's seen quail enough times where you feel like at some point he figures it out. So he could rip off the first two of the year, and then we're on Grand Slam alert at that point. 100%. Right?
Oh my God. If he gets the first two, I think.
And then Oakmont, we love him there. I mean, we could really get some momentum going. So, but I like Colin as a guy that, it's interesting, you know, Xander and Colin aren't too dissimilar to me. You know, Collins had some, the struggle with Collins been putting. He's almost in that sort of Scotty bucket as well, but just a steady guy who just doesn't have a ton of weaknesses. He had that short game issue a couple years ago, really kind of shored that up.
Definitely. But you know what he has right now, Charlie? He's got a chip on his shoulder. And I think that means something. Yeah. I think Xander had some of that chip on his shoulder this year. And I think Colin, it's come across in interviews at times, just this confidence of like, wait, why did you ask me that question? Like he sees himself as the best player in the world. Like he knows what the benchmark is with Scotty, and him and every other players have acknowledged Scotty's greatness over the last couple of years, but he's not shying away from a battle with anybody.
So that's the, will anyone have a Xander breakthrough question? The next one, first time major winner. We both say, yes, you're taking not Tommy Fleetwood. You're taking Tyrrell Hatton. I'm taking Victor Hovland.
I got Ludwig at the Masters too. So we'll see. That's a heart pick. I want Ludwig to win the Masters.
I would love to see Ludwig win the Masters. So we're saying yes on that. Will a live player win a major? You're saying yes with Tyrrell at the Open. I'm saying no. The last one we had, I think we kind of danced around this a little bit, but just a guy that a major dark horse that we could see kind of finding his way into contention. There's someone you like off the top of your head there.
I have two names written down, two names that I think both have similar profiles, both kind of play the game similarly. And Russell Henley's one.
Yeah, I love that one.
I just think that if you look at his results and continues to improve, he's not going to be scared in a fight. I thought what he did at the President's Cup was a little telling of just his confidence that he had. Maybe it's comforting playing with Scottie Scheffler, but he really made it look easy, like that it wasn't a big deal. It's a lot of times it's not easy to pair with the number one player in the world because there's more pressure on that guy to play well. And Russell played incredible, hits it straight. I think his profile really matches up at the Open, the US Open. I think the Masters may be a little difficult and Quail too, just how long it is. But those last two, I could see Russell potentially finding his way into contention at US Open and the Open and winning one. The other name too is Matthew Fitzpatrick. He definitely had a tough year down year, but if he is able to kind of have a bit of resurgence, he's won the US Open before. I think we know what type of competitor that he is, and just that he's not going to leave any stone unturned when it comes to his game. And if he starts kind of getting that confidence back, we've seen what he's been able to do in his career, right? Like he's won plenty of times around the world. So Fitzpatrick to me is another player that is a guy that won't be talked about much, but his game definitely is capable of winning another major championship.
Yeah, I think in terms of trying to predict these types of things, I think it's much easier to paint a picture in your mind of someone who is steady and predictable, that's just able to raise their game to the next level for a week and keep it there, than it is to see, you know, try to predict some guy getting super hot who can be up and down.
Yeah, like, that's fair.
I think in some ways, you know, John Rahm, at least this last year, is a guy who obviously has all the talent in the world, but he gets it sideways one round and the whole thing kind of blows up. And so I'm not saying he's high variance for the most part, but it's in some of these settings when you're looking at guys, like you know how much of a affinity I have for young guys with a ton of talent, the Minwoo Lees of the world. It's harder to be like, Minwoo Lee's going to go out and do it this year because he could have a great week or he could miss a cut. So that's why I'm not trying to steal something you said already, but I just love what we saw from Russell Henley to close out the year. In and around it.
Oh, we're same, the Open same
Championship.
Guy.
Yeah,
same
guy. I had Henley written down because of just what we saw at the Open Championship at Royal Troon in really, really difficult conditions.
Yeah.
And then to your point, the President's Cup, I'm not saying he's like some green rookie like Jordan Spieth talked about and his first couple picks early in his career, of just getting the confidence of being on those Presidents and Ryder Cup teams and then going out and winning a major. Russell's obviously more of a veteran, but he's a guy that I just feel like has this steady game, has had it this way for years, kind of showed some form and you know, closing the year out at the Open, at the President's Cup. And I think this year it just takes one week where he can elevate his game and he can be in and around it. So I love Russell in that category.
Yeah. How about us? I think there was one other thing I wanted to like a, we kind of talked a little bit about tiers a little bit earlier when I was kind of mentioning JT falling a bit, and I think he's going to kind of get back into a different tier. There's kind of a young guys tier that I want to just like briefly get your opinion on, because there's three names that come to mind, and I don't know if major dark horse, I think it checks all of these boxes off for these guys, but the three,
like, guys going to take the next step, maybe, is that kind of what you're looking for?
I think it's you see him winning multiple times on the PGA Tour, like, and I'm talking like signature events, like not just like regular open events. I'm talking like against the best players in the world, the PGA Tour's best events. Like, I think these players, I'm curious what your opinion is, because I'm not sure. Is Sahith Theegala, Akshay Bhatia, and then the other one who's kind of the wild card in this is who I'm going to put in this category is Nick Dunlap. I think those three guys, like if we had a fortune cookie here, told us like exactly what was going to happen at the end of the year, and we looked at the results of all these events, and you saw any of those three guys win at Pebble Beach, or you saw him win at the Players Championship, or you saw him like pick off a major, you'd be like, wow, little surprise, but am I really? Like, is there one of those guys to you that sticks out? You're like, yeah, I see it. Or are you like, no, I need to see more?
It's interesting that you choose those three guys, because the place, like, I don't think anyone's questioning their talent. I think they're all phenomenally talented. I see them all as being in very different places mentally, where it seemed to me like Sahith Theegala, you almost have to convince him that he's good at golf. He came here on the podcast and he's
You're so right.
It's like, dude, you are in terms of raw talent, like maybe top 10, top five in the world. And if you could just get yourself to believe that on a week in, week out basis, you know, you'd win everything. Akshay, I think, is on the other end of that spectrum, where it takes stones to make the decision he did to skip college, to try to earn his card through the Korn Ferry Tour.
And he's too confident.
I think some of that, like that, it's very healthy self-belief to get himself there. And I don't think, even when we had him on the show, it's like, I don't think it came off as unhealthy arrogance, but it's like he believes he should be there. And I think sometimes that can lend itself to a lot of really productive things. But I think there's also times where probably there are things that just you learn experientially from being around, you know, majors and things like, you know, Gordon Sargent talking about, you know, being around, you know, Jason Day or Zach Johnson at Augusta and just not even thinking about the types of shots they're hitting and learning that, and then going next week and, you know, winning a college event by 8 shots. There are just things you have to learn by being around it, even if you're phenomenally talented. And then Nick strikes me as a guy that's just very even keel. I mean, and has a humility about himself of just winning the Amex and having to make all these decisions and doing it on short order, still being confident and having a self-belief he belongs
still
there.
Winning twice,
you know, winning again in the, you know, opposite.
So that category I was talking about is like, he has won twice. But the thing is with Nick that you just like painted that picture perfectly with Nick. But this thing that I'm worried about with him is that he still hasn't seen everything with the PGA Tour. He doesn't know all the courses perfectly yet. Everything's new. There's going to be still places he hasn't been to yet. So I still feel like with Nick, it's, you know, hasn't played in the Masters, has yet to play in an Open Championship, has played like 3 US Opens. So like, there was an event that he has had played. He's about to play his 4th US Open and he's going to be 21 years old. Like, that's just absurd. So I think you're so right on all of them. I think Sahith, if he finds the belief, he could take the next step. If Akshay maybe just finds a bit of whatever it is, I don't know exactly how to describe what it is that he needs. Like, he believes that he can win a major championship, but is he actually going to go out and do it? Or one of those big events? And then the Nick, it would not shock me at the end of the year is if he won something huge. Just would not surprise me whatsoever.
Totally agreed. I think Sahith is the closest to a major win. I think so too. But I think you could easily see Akshay and Nick winning signature events this year. No, like, that's not a stretch at all. I mean, all, so these, that's all
the,
those guys.
You go in that order. You go Sahith, Akshay, Nick, and I think the one with the most potential, probably, of one who's just out of nowhere, I think would be Nick. I think he, I think he's got the highest upside. Now Sahith is, he's unbelievable. He wows me every single day watching him. I'm just like, how do you do that? And I don't think he, I like the belief that you're talking about, like it's, you're so right. And I think the Masters to me would be actually the gala to me, like for whatever reason, I think Augusta is the place where he's going to win a major.
I like that too. I think it's almost just hearing him talk about like the things about the game he enjoys or loves. It all feels, he enjoys the creativity around it. I mean, they were talking about a guy who would, when he was at Pepperdine, intentionally hit shanks on the range to like throw off opponents.
This is a guy good hands, man.
Can do
such
a lot of different things. So I almost feel like an open championship might be the one where he just kind of gets himself into contention, hitting creative shots, you know, cause he, you know, and I'm not, anyone who plays on tour or is in major championship field has the full toolkit, but I think he's got the most diverse toolkit out of any of those guys. And you get in a situation where he calls for different shots, he already has that in his mind, you know?
I think this is a good major slate for him. I think these three of these four golf courses, I would say Thigala could win at.
Yeah.
Now I just say I've never been to Port Rush. I just remember watching it on TV, but I agree with your point talking about the creativity that you need to play an open with.
So let me pose this to you, Smiley, because I believe we're about an hour 15 plus in here, which I love. We are previewing this 2025 season. I'm getting more excited about just getting this thing going with every topic we talk about. But we have three head-to-head categories, and then we were going to do some Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year predictions. Do we want to save any of this for a future episode, or do we want to kind of rip off this entire thing and just make an extended episode?
It's up to you. We probably can do it on the back half of Capitol, or we can do it at back half or something, or we can rip it right now if you want to.
Well, I like this. That's good deferral back to your producer, putting me back in the hot seat. I love that. let's just, because we kind of touched on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's save the head to heads. Cause I want to kind of, I actually like, Smiley came up with a good little concept here of taking two players and comparing them within the framework of a certain category. And I want to kind of build this thing out and have a fuller list. We have three here. I'd like to do like 10 maybe on the back end of a smaller event where we have more time to expand. So let's just jump right to, let's do Rookie of the Year predictions and let's do Player of the Year predictions and let's wrap this thing. So would you like to lead off with Rookie of the Year?
Yeah. I think it's easy to put Matt McCarty in that category quickly because he's already won. So it's like a cheat code. He's going to be the heavy favorite, but for whatever reason, I just have this feeling that Luke Clanton's going to win this award. I just feel that he's going to take up PGA Tour status at the end of, his college career. And this would be in May. Well, I guess his college career wouldn't be over, but I just assume that he'll probably take up that PGA Tour status, being a guy that will qualify in that accelerated points to get to 20. Right now he's at 17. We assume he's going to win the Hogan Award, but he's already playing the Sony Open. So like, who's to say that he's not going to play Sony and maybe another event that doesn't conflict with the Florida State schedule. And let's say he goes and wins one, right? Like, now we're looking head to head, him and Matt McCarty, who you take and take, give me Luke Clanton. Everybody that votes on this has seen what this kid has done. He almost won at the RSM. He's not even a member yet. And I still think I'm going to take Luke Clanton to win Rookie of the Year, which is insane. But that's I think the pick for me.
I agree 100%. I mean, this guy is so insanely tour ready from top to bottom. Another guy that just seems to have the right makeup, you know, just the right blend of confidence, but groundedness, and just has all the shots and maybe none of the scar tissue yet, you know, where he's going to go out and get in and around it every single week. We'll see how that progresses. You've taken him here, so I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction. This is a guy actually that I've been thinking about more and more as we get closer to the year. And I saw him pop up in a Brittley Romine article recently. Carl Phillips.
Yeah.
It just grown on me more and more of just, We had an anomalous.
He finished 19th in the points list. So like,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we had an anonymous tipster jump into our messages a number of months ago. I was like, you guys need to start tracking this guy. He's going to be very good when he makes the PGA Tour.
Okay.
I was like, oh, interesting. And then I start kind of following his results. I like everything about his makeup. I know it's a little bit of a longer shot. Luke is, to your point, it sounds insane that we're saying Luke, a guy who does not have a PGA Tour card, is going to beat a guy who just earned his PGA Tour card. But I'm going to go with Carl in that category, just because I feel like I want to believe that Smiley Show Nation is giving us a hot tip. I'm going to ride that hot tip.
I honestly, when I look at this top 30 group, I just don't see like the star power in this group.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
You were a pothead, dude.
Well,
Aldridge Podguider, man. Let's go.
Yes and no. I mean, missed a ton of cuts. Yes, he had some big weeks, but I just don't know about this class coming up. That's my take. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be even more difficult when these guys have to go compete to try to finish in the top 100. You're going to have to really bring your lunch pail to work.
That will be interesting. If that added pressure of the crunch of it can't just be 125 this year, you got to make the most of these starts, if that impacts some of these guys. Because Podguider, I think recently, I'm trying to remember, maybe like a month ago, almost won on the DP World Tour and kind of folded in his final round.
I think it was the Ned Bank.
Yeah.
It was the Ned Bank.
Yeah. And he
has the most star power. We talked about this. Yeah. If you want to listen to an extended podcast breaking down these top 30 guys, we do this every year with James Nitties. Scroll back 7 or 8 episodes. You could find the James Nitties episode if you want a full breakdown, really, on all these, not all the guys, but we went through a good bit of them.
Yeah, James Nitties, also shout out to you for participating in the online discourse around the New York Golf Club mascot.
Pigeons.
I mean, he's all about pigeons. We need to do like we have like an offshoot podcast where we go deep on pigeons. I think I found the original podcast I listened to when I was living and working in
Miami.
You
got to send it to
Beach.
Rick and I.
Yeah, and I'll pass that on and give you guys a good little listen in the car. We'll get back to pigeon talk. That is rookie of the year, player of the year. It's almost like we should do player of the year, not name Scottie Scheffler.
No. You pick your player of the year.
You just pick it.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you don't pick Scottie, especially everything I just said to you at the top of the episode. We're talking about how many wins is Scottie going to have. And I'm telling you, I think it could be double digits. I'd then be saying, a guy who wins double digits is not going to win player of the year. And that's a patently absurd, almost more absurd than saying a guy that is going to win 10 times on tour in a season would be saying he's also not going to win player of the year. So I think I have to pick Scottie Scheffler as my player of the year.
I'm taking him as well, but I think it's going to be really close because my prediction is that Scotty wins 3 times and he wins 1 major championship. And that means it's going to be close with somebody else that's probably going to be somewhere near that category, right? With winning a major and maybe winning a couple times. I could see a year in which Colin wins twice and wins a major, or Xander Schauffele also wins 5 times but doesn't win a major. That's kind of where I see this year netting out. Maybe not quite as gobbled up as far as points goes, with Scotty and Xander eating up all the points in the FedEx Cup. I think a little bit more of a competitive year when you look at, you know, all the players that play in these signature events. I think you'll see maybe some different guys win some of these, whether it's Colin, Xander, like they kind of just – they all rotate in and win every other week. It says Scotty winning them all. That's where I think will happen. Now, I would love for Scotty to go out and win them all because it's so fun to watch greatness. But I don't know why somehow I've kind of turned my prediction into where Scotty might have a little of a letdown here. But 3 wins at a major, I don't think is any sort of bad year by any means. It's a incredible year when you look at what history has shown you. But yeah, we'll see.
I like the picture you're painting, which is that we're just going to kind of have a little more of a
wheel
spread out of the riches this year.
I think so.
You know, you're redistributing wealth amongst the PGA Tour membership, which I like. I love. I think That's actually, and maybe this is what we go out on, is like, do we think that that's the best for the current state of the professional game?
I do. I think Rory's going to have a good year. I think JT's going to have a good year. So all these guys, I mean, there's certain guys who, yes, I'm not going to go out and list the guys who I don't think are going to have great years, but I think it's going to be very, those top dudes are going to be, you know, winning a couple different times this year. I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the debate really is like, is it, do you want that? You want parity? You want to see a bunch of guys in the mix? Or do you want to watch a guy chase singular greatness and, you know, get as close to Tiger's legacy as we could possibly see? And I guess we'll find out as the year goes on.
That's where your prediction is. So that's,
I want to see that.
We both can't be on that. I, for whatever reason, am going to have to see the Saul grip more. We saw how he's putted on Poana and the West Coast. Is that going to translate over? Could see him maybe starting the year out slow until he gets to Florida again. And then I'm sure he'll play really well at Bay Hill again and he kind of rev his way up to Augusta.
Well, Smiley, there it is, our 2025 season preview with all sorts of predictions that I'm sure Jackson will bookmark for us and let us know when we miss the mark by a wide margin. Godspeed to you as you head to Hawaii with Anna Carter. I'm hoping that plane ride is I'm not even going to wish for good. I'm just going to wish for like just acceptable, like mid-level of stress for you. But
if
enjoy.
If we got a D-plus performance, I would be so pumped.
D-plus, I think, gets degrees.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I forget exactly what the phrase is there. But so, and you're going to be out there in Hawaii, obviously, for 2 weeks. Are we going to get the kayak at Sony again? Or yeah,
We might. We might.
That's what we call a tease in the industry, ladies and gentlemen.
We might.
All right. Well, there we go. We got a little something to look forward to in the Hawaii swing. And then back on the West Coast and hopefully seeing Scotty at the Amex and we'll be off and running. I'm excited, man. I'm very excited to get this thing.
Me too. Going. Hopefully all you guys are ready to get going and make sure you do all the things to make sure you get all the notifications for these episodes, subscribe, support the channel. We're excited to get rolling this year. Got a lot of fun things planned and we're happy you guys are going to be along the ride for us. And keep on commenting. Let us know what you want us to talk about. It's always fun for us to check to see whose takes are good, whose takes are bad, and some things that we need to make sure we discuss on.
That we do. We excited for 2025. Happy New Year to everybody. Go Bay Golf Club. Thanks for watching and listening, and we will talk to you right back here very soon.